I read a great article in Network Marketing Times this past week, and I really enjoyed it so much. In fact, I want to meet this woman. And at first, I wasn't interested in meeting her, but now I, after reading the article, you know, and getting to understand it more and spending some time on her website, I'm going to tell you that I'm really excited about what she's done and what she's doing in the realm of understanding people and our emotional status. Lydia, we're getting tons of clicks again. I don't know what causes the clicking, but it's such a nerve. It's just, you want me to mute and unmute? Okay, I'll try it. We're going to try again. Okay. Okay, great. Thanks. Okay. So anyway, but she spends times she works at a clinic called the Positive Emotions and Psychophysiology Laboratory at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And what the whole thing is about, that, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about negative emotions, and there's massive things written about negative emotions and how to overcome negative emotions, whether it's anger or anger management or, I mean, you know, all this kind of stuff, mourning. And I mean, you could go into books, personal development books and psychology books, and you'll find literally thousands of books just on negative emotions and trying to overcome negative emotions. And there's a lot of research on negative emotions because we know how it impacts, like we talk about a depression and things like that, and how it impacts our immune system, it impacts our cardiovascular, so all these things. So we know even how it impacts our health. But she says it seemed really clear that no one was really talking about what? Our positive emotions. And she said, and it's not really surprising that we don't deal with positive emotions, because it follows the prevalent disease model that we have in modern medicine, which is where we're constantly looking for problems and trying to solve them. So we're not isolating on, you know, and I love this kind of analysis, because I look at what is Manatech about. We went from a company that searched out problems to now a company of wellness talking about prevention and how do I bring goodness in people's life and have them focus on wellness, right? So it's very similar to what we're doing in Manatech, that we're getting people to focus on wellness instead of looking at the disease model. So she started asking all sorts of questions about, well, you know, why do we have positive emotions? What are they good for? How do they evolve? All of these questions were wide open, and she put that at the core of her study. So anyway, so we're going to talk about that. Her article is written. It talked about all these things. He says everybody has emotions, whether they acknowledge them or not. And when we don't acknowledge how our emotions are shaping us, whether they're negative or positive emotions, we don't have access to what she calls a steering wheel of our life. So get that. When we don't acknowledge how our emotions are shaping us, whether they're negative or positive, we're not getting access to the steering wheel of our life. So she calls it that we end up kind of just pushing our way through as if we're in a bumper car instead of really steering our way through life. Isn't that amazing? And how many of us can look at our life and say, wow, does that apply to me? I'm not keeping aware of my emotional state. I'm just banging around like a bumper car in life. So her research on positive emotions has really taught Barbara how to live with more what she calls balance in her life and have more life in life. In other words, live life to its fullest, a fuller life, because of the research that she's done around positive emotions. So let's jump in. First of all, talk about negative emotions. There's an article in the Review of General Psychology called Bad is Stronger Than Good. And what this is it's so in the article they summarize decades of work to show negative emotions grab our attention much more thoroughly than positive emotions. So in other words, example you just said, here, take for example losing $100. Losing $100 feels a lot worse to us than winning $100 feels good. So that we could win $100 and be over it in 10 minutes or 1 hour or 5 hours, but when we lose $100, look at how it eats us apart as a person. And there's you know, that really sent some signals to me about, you know, just even through the recession when we looked at our 401ks and the loss people feel and the depression that sits in and all this stuff, we just linger in that negativity kind of stuff. It's and there, so clearly there's evidence of it everywhere. And it's an asymmetry that she talks about. Why? What is asymmetry? For those of you who don't, asymmetry means it's not. There's no symmetry. There's not an equal there. It's asymmetrical. It's out of balance. In other words, our bad emotions really grab onto us and hold onto us like a grip, whereas our good emotions tend to be more fleeting. Everybody getting that? And some of this, if you look at the historical perspective, comes from that ancestral perspective, because most of the time, things that generate negative emotions, one area would be life or death situations. So fight or flight, those kind of fears that we have and things like that on life or death. And so they're more dramatic than when we express perhaps some of our good emotions, where, and she kind of looked at good emotions, typically positive emotions are not life-threatening, but rather like missed opportunity versus capitalized opportunity. So it's a different set of facts that aren't life. Positive emotions are seldom going to be life or death matters. So that's why bad emotions have such a heaviness upon us. Another asymmetry that exists in our life is good and bad events in the world. And if you look at news, what do we see every day? I mean, if we look at things that happen in the world, there's a tremendous amount of positive things that happen in the world, but they don't make the news. And they far outweigh the bad things that are happening. You look at all the charitable work and the things we're trying to do in Africa and in underdeveloped countries and what we did in Haiti and all these things. You know, I mean, there's just so much greatness of what people do in this world to help to try to conquer world problems. But you know what? We tend to emphasize the bad stuff. A terrorist bombing, a takeover, a plane crash, and the Polish president dies, and everybody goes into gloom. And it's our nature. So we know that even though the bad things that happen in the world are far fewer than all the greatness and goodness out there, we don't get that perception because the badness is what weighs heavy on our heart. It really grabs our attention much more than the good does. So there's another asymmetry. So you've got these things that are out there, and knowing that we're wired this way, knowing that the asymmetry exists between positive and negative emotions, that negative feelings hit us much harder and grab our attention more thoroughly than positive feelings, that knowing we're hardwired that way, that's what gives us an awareness that we need to do something to overcome that in our lives. We need to take action. We need to have the awareness of it and then take action to compensate for that in our life. In other words, we need to have put more power and more directiveness and be more akin towards grabbing onto those good emotions and walking in that good emotional state at a far greater pace than what we are today. Now, she went into something that she started studying this, and she developed what's called like the golden rule, okay? And first of all, studies show that a typical person, if you took a typical person that didn't suffer from depression or an anxiety disorder, that they typically have 2-to-1 ratio of good emotions to bad, okay? Which might surprise some of you guys, but you can look at your life and you can say, you know, yeah, that probably makes sense. That you spend, it would always be looking at your life. You spend 2-to-1 times more happier than unhappy, or in a state of exhilaration, or than you do in a state of depression, or something that's anger, or some kind of harsh thing. So the average, the typical person, is a 2-to-1 ratio of good to bad. But what she also found out in the studies is that the people who truly flourish and truly are successful and truly have fulfillment in their life and truly reach that beyond the realm of feeling that their life has been just tremendously full, are those people have a 3-to-1 ratio of good emotions to bad. And so you can say, well, Mary Jo, how did she come up? How do you get this ratio? I mean, how do you model this? How do you do this? Well, she went into collaboration with a psychologist whose specialty was in mathematical modeling. And he gathered great information on business teams. He started by observing subjects in hour-long meetings where they worked on 5-year plans and things like that. He recorded everything said in the meetings, whether it was positive, neutral, or negative. whether it was asking a question, which he called inquiry, or advocating the speaker's own point of view, and whether the statement showed an other focus and orientation outside of the group or was more of an insular focus. So he did all this study on human behavior and team-like models, and he created a mathematical model of the behavior that he observed. And over the years working with Barbara, he came up with the mathematical model that yielded the precise ratio that spelled out the difference between high functioning and just doing okay. And of course, you can choose to just do okay. My preference is high functioning, but you know, there's a choice that we make out there. So he said, here's the mathematical model, and that's where they found that in what was true in every case, the ratios above 3-1 uniquely described people who are flourishing, and the ratios below 3-1 described everybody else. So it was kind of like building a emotional pH test. And so if that makes sense, your pH, what is your emotional pH? And you could say, well, Mary Jo, how do I find out what my emotional pH is? Well, what Barbara did is she set up a website, and I gave you her website, positivityratio.com, and I don't want you to go there now because you'll miss the rest of the talk, but you can go there. There's a test on there. It only takes a couple of minutes to take the test, and then they'll tell you how you pop out in terms of your ratio. And then what she suggests to start working on this and trying to pull you into another direction so that you have a higher ratio, she says what you want to do is you want to do it on a daily basis. So go in there and spend 2 minutes a day taking the test, and then start focusing on your, you know, what can I do to improve? Look at my emotions. Start fighting some of the things that are the self-talk, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, and some of the things that drag us down, and try to build, be more uplifting, and watch what happens. Maybe stop watching some of the newscasting and all those kind of things. But whatever, you know, there's a lot of behavioral suggestions that she makes. You can go to the website and look at that as well. It's a pretty neat website. And you can actually sign up to have a special, you know, your special account there as well. And I didn't do that, so I don't know. I don't think there's any cost to it whatsoever. This is all free. Taking the test is free. It just, she wants to just impact your life and help you take an approach that's going to be more positive directed. Okay, so that's a great concept. I think it's great for all of us. I'm going to do it. I talked to Lydia about it this morning and said, let's do this together. And so Lydia wanted me to take her test for her, but I said, no, that doesn't work. The one thing I want you all to be aware of when you go in there, if you choose to take this test, is that you want to have a big, huge caution that if you don't walk in truth, you're going to have a hard time on this test. Because the test results aren't going to prove any very valuable to you. You must step into total truth, be really true to self as you're answering the questions. Because underlying assumption to this is that you're accurately reflecting what is going on in your life. And when you're not true to self, then you have a problem with ever getting the awareness to help you move forward. So it's crucial that is an underlying concept when you go and do the test. And I kind of, as she was describing this caution, I said to myself, it's very much like that book, Life as Art, that I've reviewed with you guys in the past, and talking about the fact that in order to build structural tension in your life, which is what causes you to change, you need to start with reality and build where you want to be. And that's like that rubber band that stretches between two fingers. There has to be some resolution. One end is going to come towards the other one, or that rubber band will eventually break. But if you don't have the right starting point, if you're not viewing your reality today properly, you'll never get to that goal that you set for yourself. So you got to get a real look at where am I today, okay? The current situation's got to be clear and evident for you. All right. So anyway, so great opportunity to give you a tool to work on yourself. She also talked about toxic insincerity, because can you fool people? Yeah. In fact, network marketing is very much about that. Sometimes you guys have heard in network marketing, fake it until you make it. You know, and she says that the science around it really is kind of fascinating, because science shows that insincere smiles can be as damaging to the cardiovascular system as expressions of hostility and contempt. So, you know, this concept of fake it till you make it, you got to be really careful about that. And I'm not an advocate. I, you know, when I first heard that in network marketing, I was like, well, and I'm not saying that you don't put a goal out there and talk in present tense. Like some of you I'm working with in the Map Your Way to Presidential class, and I want you to write your goals. I am presidential director on or before March 15th, and I want you to walk in that light today. Now, that's not faking it until you make it. That's a way of visualization and personally taking on a goal, internalizing it, so that it helps you move forward to that direction. Because you have a date on it, and you have and you're stepping into it today. The fake it till you make it is you know, faking, you know, misrepresenting or doing things like that to other people. Like if you went out and said, "I'm a presidential director," I mean, I wouldn't do that if I weren't a presidential director. You don't have to represent that to other people. You can help yourself with it, but fake it till you make it and misrepresenting things is not advocated. She also said that masking a negative feeling with positive veneer, in other words, putting a positive facade on yourself over a negative feeling, can be both psychologically as well as interpersonally damaging. So she's not advocating that as well either. So it's not about, you know, "Oh, Mary Jo, I'm going to be positive and I'll just fake it." You know, and it's about living with reality and tackling that reality. She says what our focus needs to be on is our focus needs to be on the make it, not on the fake it. Focus on making it, not on the faking it. And then she also got into elimination, because sometimes you think about positive and how do I eliminate negative feelings? Well, the fact is that there's no reason to eliminate or banish any negative feeling. Even scripture tells us that it doesn't say don't be angry, right? It's just, what are we doing with the anger that we have? So don't act out of anger. Don't create negative results because of the anger we have. God acknowledges that we are going to be angry. We acknowledge that. Whatever person you are, whatever spirituality, we acknowledge that anger is going to enter our life. And she refers to it as necessary negative emotions. Somebody dies in your life. My brother passed away. Yeah. Did that shock my system? Absolutely. Was I angry? Oh, you bet. Did I take it out on somebody? Yeah, God. That's who I went to. I yelled, I was angry that he allowed that to happen. When in my mind, his wife should have been the one that was dead, not my brother. You know, anyway, I was angry about all of that. But I spent the time with him, and I'm telling you, the next day, it was resolved. Now, I still had mourning in my heart. That's another negative, quote-unquote, negative emotion. But it's natural, people, that you're going to have some of these negative emotions that happen in your life. Just like if you have an injustice in your life, a terrible injustice, you might get angry about it. So we have necessary. What she's trying to tackle with us is the ones that are what she calls gratuitous negativity. And it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Because first of all, if you just recognize what is the media all about, they have a famous saying, if it bleeds, it leads. In other words, they want the gory story on that front page. They want the most obnoxious thing. You guys thinking about Mexico. All we thought about was Mexico. Is everybody's getting killed down there? Ugh. You know, I mean, we just love the gory details. We love the most horrific stories. We love to hear about blood and guts. I mean, we look at all our things. The O.J. Simpson trial. If that wasn't clear to people. Tiger Woods. Man, we couldn't wait. All the newspaper about is little flings with so-and-so and so-and-so, what they said, their little text messages, all this crap. Every single day it was like hitting the newspaper, and I was like, give it up. Let it go. Get out of his life. I mean, I understand public figures open themselves up to that, but you know what? I don't want to hear about it. That's focus on that garbage and trash is what we get. We get so influenced by that in our society because that's what media is about. And we do the same thing, gossip. I love it. You go to church, and what do people say? Oh, Mary Jo, would you pray for this person? Because, you know, she's having an affair with her next-door neighbor's husband. And you go, what? You know, you could say, could you give her a silent prayer request? But, you know, this gossip stuff has got to stop. Ridiculous what we do as a society. We get caught up in all that negativity, biting sarcasm. Oh, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Who get so sarcastic. It's just a release of it. We are so, in our society today, I don't even want to go into the politics. I don't even want to touch that topic. It's so outrageous. I tell people every day, we don't need terrorism in our country, the United States. We have that. We hate each other. There's so much hate going on, and it's not even funny. It's sick. We have a sickness in our society today. And it's just pervasive, and it's sad. But it's just, that's the kind of negative, that's the kind of gratuitous negativity that's out there. And it's happening everywhere, and it's the kind of stuff that eats us up, and it just drives us, and it just causes us to just be overwhelmed with that, and it runs our life. And you will not flourish. And I'm not willing to sacrifice that. And she's done such a great job of talking about people who are resilient and people who flourish and people who don't. So let's talk about resilient. Do you want to be a resilient person or do you want to be non-resilient? Do you want to flourish or do you want to flounder? And it has so much to do because our emotions are really what, you know, they really dictate where we go in our life. Emotions, you know, resilient people, for a resilient people, number one, emotions are tied to current circumstances. In other words, whatever's happening in the moment, resilient people are in the moment emotionally. So they're not tied to past, they're not tied, they're tied in the moment. Today matters. They're very much in the moment people, okay? We want to live in the moment, and our emotions are in the moment. Another thing about resilient people is that resilient people are more emotionally nimble. In other words, they can experience negative emotions when the environment creates those, but they can quickly, what, return to the relative positivity as the environment changes. They don't hang on. They have transition. They're quick to move. And I was, when I was reading this, I was going, that sounds like Mary Jo. What's, you know, some people say, if I asked on this call, there are probably some people that might want to get off moot. What's Mary Jo's favorite word? One of you guys knows it out there. When it comes to negative things or something that bad that happens, what's Mary Jo's favorite word?
Next.
There you go. See? I told you somebody on this call would know. The word next. N-E-X-T. It is such a powerful word. I'll never forget Lydia when she first started working for me. And she'd screw up. She got payroll all messed up or something. I don't know how many times. And I'm not telling on her. It's just part of what happened. It's just a fact. It doesn't bother me, but I would sit down with her and I'd say, Lydia, okay, let's review this. Okay, great. Okay, so you're not going to do that again. Great. Okay, next. And she'd go, how can you do that? And she would look at me and marvel. How can you do that? And I'd say, what do you mean, how can I do that? She goes, how can you just walk away from a big screw-up like that? You treat it like, I mean, it was major. And she was like, how can you just walk away? You know, I did this, this, and this. How do you just release it? And I go, well, what did you want me to do? Did we walk through it? Have you learned how not to make the mistake again? What is it going to do to me to hang on to it? What value is there? What value? And she, it blew her away. But you know what? Guess what? I have a new next lady in my life, and her name is Lydia. It might have taken her 6 months, a year to really finally get it, but she gets it. And that's what, you know, resilient people do. It's the next. And it's not that we don't learn from a mistake. It's we learn and we move on. No lingering. We get back to positive. Get back to positive. Are negative things going to happen in our life? Absolutely. NEXT, next. And the other thing about resilient people is they tend to have a complex emotional mix of reactions in the midst of difficult circumstances. They can feel anxious and worried while at the same time feeling grateful and loving. Isn't that intriguing? So they don't, it's like, because no situation that you really get involved in is really 100% good or bad. There's always value in everything that we have in life. So it's the concept of being able to mix those emotions and be able not to just focus on the negative and look at the down, but to be able to bring in the goodness of it. And this is so critical for all of you in network marketing because we're going to have some tough days in network marketing, aren't we? But why are we lingering and focusing on that? What we need to do is we need to focus on the greatness and the goodness that we have. And focusing on that really changes that. And that's the neat thing about it, that even in the most trying times. And I started thinking about this. I went right back to the most damaging time of my life that I look at. The biggest disaster of my life wasn't the loss of my dad or my mom because they were in their late 70s, 80s. And, you know, that's just part of the process. That was more of a victory in life. I felt a sense of loss, but I felt a sense of victory for their greatness in their lives. And I was a sense of gratitude for having them as parents. father lost his life in his 40s, that was devastating to me. So I look back at that. I said, in the midst of all that, and of course I saw myself transform, help from, you know, my spiritual, you know, my Savior, and help me transform to be able to tackle that. But I remember the joy of the kids and the playfulness that we had that week I was out there and how much fun. I remember preparing for my brother's funeral. And I said, I was in the midst of working with my brother and my other brother and my sister talking about, you know, the family decisions and what we wanted to do at the funeral and stuff. And I was like, you know, they were talking about the songs, and I said, I think we should sing "He Is Risen," and I want the coffin to open. And they all went. I mean, I remember these things, and I kept thinking, maybe this is what she's talking about—that even in the sense of loss, we can still bring joy and love, because the love and the appreciation that I know where my brother is today—that he is risen. And it was just kind of a neat thing. But I'm just sharing that with you. But it's the idea that even in the negative realms and in the tough times that we have, we can have that mixture. It's that we have that complex figure. Now, people who are not resilient, let's compare resilient to non-resilient, are more likely to worry about what ifs. I see the word "what if" is not; it doesn't even exist in my vocabulary. But the concept of worrying about what ifs. Well, what if this? What if this? What if this? What if this? And all they do is think about what ifs, and they dwell on all the downside potential. And they dwell on things also that happened in the past that are safely behind us, but they dwell on that. A lot of people live in their past. That's not a resilient person. And it surely isn't. You're not living in your past because it was bright and sunny. You're typically choosing your past because you have some negative things. That's why unforgiveness is so overwhelmingly horrible in our lives, and when we carry unforgiveness, because it's a horrifically negative emotion, and it's all about past. And we need to release it. And if that's one thing you just look at today and just change today, you can on a drop of a hat, you can walk away from unforgiveness. But it's all choice. And you got to give up. You want to be right about it. Well, it's not about being right. Do you want to be healthy and happy, or do you want to be right? You know, just because you forgive somebody doesn't make them right and you wrong. Forgiveness isn't about right and wrong. Forgiveness is about what we need to do in our life every day. Because wouldn't you want to be forgiven? Right? Look at the greatest forgiveness that we have in our whole, you know, the universe. So anyway, then she talked a little bit about, the other thing about non-resilient tend to experience any positive emotions when feeling negative. In other words, non-resilient people, when they find themselves flailing in negative emotions, they find it almost impossible to grapple with the goodness or laughing or positive emotions. When bad things happen, all the good emotions go right out the window. So that's another thing, you know. And I know that, you know, in fact, even in a sense of some of the worst or dire circumstances, I tend to step up and say, but let's look at the great side. You know, it's always about, is the glass half empty or half full? What are you looking at in life? Focus on the greatness. And I was just coaching this morning with somebody on my team, and we talked about gratefulness. And she was overwhelmed by the fact that she's doing this, you know, this daily dozen tracker sheet, and every day she's being thankful. And she says, you know, Mary Jo, every day she says, I'm thinking of, it's incredible when you focus on what to be grateful about, and you have kind of the things that you just become perfunctory. In other words, you continue to say them each day. And then all of a sudden, new things start popping in your brain. And it's amazing how many things we have in our world to be thankful for. And even out of the direst straits, we can be thankful for things. We can convert any dire circumstance into something to be thankful about. And that, it was huge for her. It was gigantic. And it's just wonderful to see people blossom like that, because that's just, and when I was talking to her about it, I said, and you know what? A person that goes through an aha like that at later stages in their life, if it's a non-resilient person, you know what they do? They end up going, oh, if I only would have seen this when I was 18, how different my life would be. Oh, I want to take out the garbage can and throw up. They even take a great aha moment of a new awareness in life, and they turn it into something negative. In other words, oh, if I only would have had, coulda, shoulda, woulda, all that stuff is garbage. It's all a bunch of garbage. So get rid of it out of your whole state and stick with just celebrating a great new aha moment in your life that totally can help you live today a better day and tomorrow an even greater day. And that's where we go. So She talked about Barbara. I know I'm running over time because we spent so much time in Mexico. Sorry. If you want to hang with me, hang with me. We'll take about another 5 minutes or so. We should get through this. Most of our circumstances are not 100%. I talked about that. Bright-sided by Barbara Ehrenreich. That was a book that she was reading. Her book is entitled "How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America," and the problem that sometimes that we think positive thinking and we just force people into it. You know what I mean? It's like, so it's people get into that fake it type thing, and we've got to be able to have the capacity to embrace the contradiction, the ability to look at both sides of a situation and experience opposing emotional states. So we can't just live in la-la land. That's not what she's promoting. She's talking about that concept of being able to experience both sides. Remember that nimbleness of being able to transition and be able to experience both of them. So it's not about people who are just totally focused on positive. It's people that are focused on positive, understand, though, the complexity of the contradiction of the negative and positive emotions, how they play side by side, so that they can grapple with it. And truly, emotions last for moments, but we truly can cultivate certain emotions to help us grow in a certain direction. So we know that that's a capacity, and it's around the word choice, choice. What choice are you making? What choice? And then she did a piece on emotions and self-talk. And, of course, that's where, you know, the most important leverage point for our emotions is how we interpret our current circumstances. That's our leverage point. In other words, what's your current circumstance right now? That dictates to you emotional response. So our leverage point is what our current circumstance dictating an emotional response. So many times, self-talk has nothing to do with it. Something bad happens, something great happens. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with self-talk. But on the other hand, a lot of times in interpretation of our current set of circumstances, what comes into the picture? This little voice in our brain, and that's what causes us to create an interpretation of a current circumstance. The little voice talks to us to help us interpret a current circumstance. So what happens if people don't trust? When something happens, people go, oh, well, I don't know if I trust that. And you go, whoa, where did that come from? Those kind of things blow me away. Well, Mary Jo, my intuition tells me I shouldn't trust him. Well, really, why? What was it in the way he looked, the way he acted, the way he dressed, what was it? And usually when I start pursuing that with people, I find what the core prejudice is underlying that. There's a core prejudice behind it. So it's intriguing to watch that happen. But it's self-talk that's getting people, you know, this self-talk, this programming and this self-talk that goes on that causes us to interpret a situation a certain positive or negative way. And one of the things that was really cool that she brought up, and I think this is really neat to look at because I hear people talk this way from time to time, and she kind of really analyzed it for me, the interpretations that we get from our self-talk and the importance of us changing that self-talk. And remember, there's a great book out there by Helmstetter, What to Say to Yourself When You Talk to Yourself, What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. It's just a great book. Shad Helmstetter wrote it. So if you haven't read that one and you have issues around self-talk, boy, oh boy, nail that one down. But she talks about the work in this area about getting us out of depressogenic. I'd never heard that word before, depressogenic self-talk towards healthier expectations, because it is really about expectations. Our circumstances provide us with expectations. And what happens around negative self-talk, when you're being catastrophic, how many times, and this is this catastrophic thinking or verbalizing that occurs with lots of people, it's when we use these exclusive words like, why does this always happen to me? Well, it doesn't always happen. But see how we get catastrophic about it. We say, oh, yes, it does, Mary Jo. It always happens to me. Or why do they always do that? These absolute, this terminology, if you can remove the nevers and always out of your life, you're going to be better off in life. First of all, start with that opening premise. Because life happens to all of us. But nothing always happens to you. No one does everything always. You know, but it's this catastrophe. We build this into making it catastrophic. So it justifies our negative behavior. So watch your languaging pattern if you have some of that going on. And then her last piece in the last day talked about the impact of this on health. And a lot of it, you know, we, like I said earlier, we have a tremendous amount of studies out there about negative emotions and their impact on health. But we really don't have a lot in the realm of positive emotions and the impact on health. We can assume the opposite, but, you know, it's not necessarily true. She says there's a tipping point in the balance scale, and she said that's the real issue, the balance between negative and positive. And she said right now they're doing a lot of studies and looking at that. How is this impacting our health and the importance of what that balance does in our life? So they're doing more and more studies on that. And so that's her piece, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited for you guys. If you want to learn more, go to her website. She sounds like a dynamite person I would like to meet someday and share with her, because I think she's on a great track in terms of taking us to another level. And when I did my positivity test and I ratio test when I went in there, and I will share with you, I did not get a 3-to-1 ratio. I was like 2.5. So I have work to do. But each one of you is going to be a little different. So go in there and fill it out and see where you line up. And then if you want to try to tackle it every day with some improvement and making some directional changes, that's great. But I want to be a flourisher, not a flounderer. So that's a choice we all make. All right. So great. Anyone have any questions about it? Did you enjoy this work by Barbara, or did you? Is this new to some of you? Is this something that might help you? Everybody goes, you're way over, Mary Jo.
No, I'm thinking of M.J. Perry.
Oh, great. Yeah, about exclusionary language, right?
Yes, and, you know, even just listening to his tapes and realizing how oftentimes people say something and we usually say, oh, no problem, instead of saying, oh, it was my pleasure.
Right. In fact, and you hear even more in Mexico, they go, no problema. So good comment. I got to bring that up, right? Yeah,
yes.
Well, it's my pleasure, right?
Hey, Joe, yeah. What was the name of that book that you said what to say to yourself by? What was the guy's name?
His name is Shad, S H A D Helmstetter, H E L M S T E D D E R, I believe, Helmstetter, and it's What to Say When You Talk to Yourself, I believe, is the title.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's a great one. Oh, it's a great one. I recommend it to anyone who has self-talk issues going on. And we all have self-talk, but is it positive feed or is it negative? Yeah, yeah, great. M.J. Perry was terrific, and he would talk about our languaging. She's talking about emotions, but what causes our languaging to come out of our mouth? Our languaging comes from our thoughts and our emotions. That's how the language comes out. Yeah, great, great. And the self-talk, that's what it creates. And words are so powerful. Absolutely.
Hey, Mary Jo, it's Joni.
Yeah, Joni.
Did you ever watch Pollyanna, the Disney movie?
Nope.
Play the Glad Game.
Wait a minute.
I watched that movie.
I shouldn't say that. I watched Pollyanna probably when I was like 7 or 8 years old, right? It's a great one.
There you go.
Yeah,
you live your life
movie.
By that. Play the Glad Game.
It's a great movie. It's a happy movie. It's about, in fact, they call people the Pollyanna complex because they think everything's great. Everything, but it's just, it's not that you live in a superficial world and it's like you become one of these people. You don't want to become one of these people that goes around and smiles at everything and everything's perfect and everything. That's because that's not, you know, remember, that's not what she's saying. There are necessary times where you're going to have a negative emotional experience.
She's saying, look for the good in everything. My kids make fun of me all the time. Well, there's Mom. Play the Glad Game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you know, I took this. Somebody else was talking to me about this same issue, and they said, and I said, you can see it in our society everywhere. Like I was just in Oklahoma City this weekend. I was at a conference, and then I went to Oklahoma yesterday, all day yesterday. And I'm telling you, this whole thing, they're still talking about the Oklahoma City bombing. And I'm like thinking to myself, oh, my gosh. You know, these are the people, yes, was it a terrible event? Absolutely. But these people that went to the trial of Timothy McVeigh and had to see him get convicted, and then they went to the prison and had to see him injected with poison and killed. I mean, I look at this and I go, how does that? And people goes, well, Mary Jo, I needed closure. I said, what do you mean you need a closure? You're still talking about it today, and now you got the vision of the guy getting killed by being injected with poison chemicals. I said, I just, you know what? I don't get it. I don't get it. But that's who we are. It's something, we're hardwired that way. And it's really a sadness in me that we can't get that hardwire changed. We can't see the price we all pay for carrying all of that stuff. Carrying it all. We just carry that baggage everywhere we go. So just look at, take an eye at that. And I know some of you on the call are going, Mary Jo, I would hate that guy and I would do that if that was your daughter or that was your son who died into there. And I go, you know what? Trust me, it wouldn't be different for me. I mean, it wouldn't be like you. I wouldn't change my walk because of a death of a brother or a son. My brother passed away and I went to see my sister-in-law who shot and killed him the next day and prayed with her and told her how much we loved her. Me hating her and despising her and wanting the worst for her in life is never going to bring back my brother. And you know what? All I can pray for is her soul and for her to have a better understanding of life, to maybe make a contribution. And today she's doing Christian ministry work in prison. That's super. Now, if I would have hated her and I would have done, who knows? I mean, I don't say my influence on her life caused her to take a new path, because that's not me. That's God's work. But the reality was, I didn't carry judgment against her. I didn't wish her the worst. I didn't try to get the death penalty. I didn't do any of that.
Bad stuff happens, and you took that bad, terrible thing that happened in your life, and you looked for all the good that could come of it. You played the God game.
Absolutely. And I loved getting these two kids, and I loved raising my brother's kids, because I was never going to have that opportunity except under these dire circumstances, and now I got a huge opportunity from them. Was that not a blessing? And these kids are a blessing in my life every day of my life. Every day. So, you know, there's greatness in everything out there, people. You just got to focus on it and grab onto it and run with it. All right. I love you all. Have a great week. Oh, don't forget, this is the last week of Business Period 4, so get all that stuff done so we make sure people qualify. Get your points lined up. You know, we only have Business Period 5, 6, and 7 left to be in Atlantis together. Does that mean Mary Jo's going? Absolutely. So are you going? Absolutely. Get your stick together and let's make this happen. Yoo-hoo! Yeah.
Mary Jo, excuse me, please. You mentioned one book. I couldn't catch it. How the Unrelentless Negative Thinking Has Undermined America. Is that correct?
How the Unrelentless Has Undermined America Thinking. Yeah. It's the book is called Bright Sided, and it's written by Barbara Ehrenreich. Her subtitle is How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, promotion of positive thinking.
Yeah, positive, because she's saying, her thing is that you can't go overwhelming on the other side, to the point where all you do is focus on positive thinking every morning and you don't allow yourself to express the negative emotion. Do you follow me?
We need
to understand that there are going to be necessary times for us to, so it's about a balance. It's not about just positive thinking about, you know, the power of positive thinking. Well, yeah, that we want to try to focus on the greatness and everything, but we have to give validity in our lives as well to some of the anger we might have or the mourning we might have. Those things are important for us to grapple with as well, equally as well. It's
okay.
Just, you follow me? You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Her book is more guided towards, don't get caught up in this whole thing about just totally banishing negative emotions. As I said earlier, even scripture says be angry, right? I mean, God understands we're going to get angry. He wants us to be angry about things, right? But he doesn't want us to act out of anger, because that's when we start having sinful behavior. Anger in itself is not sinful behavior. Negative emotions.
We can't bury our negative stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You'll eat yourself up alive. And that's what she's trying to say, is the problem with a lot of people that just go positive, 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 you keep burying that stuff. Just like, you know, when I talk about, and I know I talk about my brother's situation a lot, because it's such an incredible experience to have lost somebody that you love so dearly. But I spent 4 hours yelling at God. I mean, crying out and yelling in anger. I mean, I didn't bury, if I would have buried that, who knows what a mess I'd be today. I mean, I'm already kind of, no kidding. But I mean, but you know, I would have carried so much baggage, but I took the energy and time to be angry, release that, get it out, feel every ounce of me. I dug so deep and just spewed it. I just spewed it. But
wow.
You get it?
Yes, I do. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing.
All right. Great. All right, you guys, love you. Have a great week. Let's get after it, and we'll keep our updates on Mexico. Okay. Bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, Mexico.